Hello and good evening, everyone. I'm Corina Pereira. Welcome once again to our SDR Knowledge Foundation Knowledge Series. The session of Knowledge Series is organized every month, irrespective of the pandemic and lockdown. The sessions of Knowledge Series will continue to encourage, motivate, and enhance the energy of the audience of Knowledge Series. Knowledge Series is a point of origin for the Central India's first Multilingual Literature Festival, Orange City Literature Festival, that is OCLF Nagpur. OCLF is now entering into the fourth edition this November 2022 after the success of past three editions of it. Knowledge City session is now a part of Orange City Literature Festival. Today's session is the 65th session of this series and is supported by Readomania Publication. Our speaker for today's session is Dr. Manjiri Prabhu in conversation with Mr. Dipankar Mukherjee. Dr. Manjiri Prabhu holds a doctorate in communication science and is an independent filmmaker for television. She is a writer, a novelist in English, and also the founder and director of Pune International Literary Festival. She has directed over 200 children's TV programs, more than 50 short fiction and travel films, and has authored 15 books. Her unpublished psychological thriller novel was adapted into a Hindi feature film by NFDC titled Kuch Dil Ne Kaha. Her thesis converted into a book titled Roles, Reels and Real has become a rare reference book for students of Hindi cinema. Dr. Prabhu has been acknowledged as a pioneer in India among women writers of mystery fiction, and she has a diverse global fan following. She is also the first female mystery author to be published outside India and has been labeled as the Indian Agatha Christie. And much recently, Prabhu has been acknowledged to be a match for Dan Brown by Dr. Shashi Tharoor. Her novel, The Cosmic Clues, was selected as a killer book by Independent Mystery Booksellers of America. And The Astral Alibi was honored as a notable book in the Kiriyama Prize. Her books have been published by very reputed publishers. She has recently been awarded the Inspirational Women of Maharashtra Excellence in the field of writing in 2017 and has most admired leader of Maharashtra by ERTC Global Herald 2017. Also, she has been awarded the Rex Kermvir Gold Medal Award in 2016, instituted by I Can Go and the UN. She's also a dog lover promoting caring and adoption of stray. On behalf of SGR Knowledge Foundation Knowledge Series, it's my pleasure to welcome you, ma'am. Welcome, ma'am. A writer only begins a book, a reader finishes it. By Samuel Johnson. Yes, our topic for today's session is on writing books that children read. Our moderator, Mr. Dipankar Mukherjee, is the publisher and director of Readomania Publishing, an independent publishing house based in Delhi. Under his leadership, the house has produced over 120 books in just about 6 years, with some critically acclaimed and award-winning titles as well. He teaches creative writing at many institutes and runs the popular Young Author Program. He is an engineer from Nagpur University, holds an MBA degree from IIT Madras, and has been in the corporate world for 9 years. Before becoming an entrepreneur, he also manages business interest in hospitality and manufacturing. We welcome you, sir.
Thank you.
So now I request sir to kindly take over the session.
Thank you, Corina. It was a lovely introduction that you gave for Ms. Prabhu as well as me. So quickly jumping into the session, Manjiri, the first thing that I want to ask you is, why did you decide to write for children when you were already a very successful writer for adult fiction?
Thank you, Corina. Thank you, Dipankar. Pleasure to be here. Well, Deepankar, I know I keep getting asked this question, why write for children when I was already writing for adults? But the secret behind this is that I always wanted to be a children's author. You know, always. It was when I was growing up, I was around 7 years old when I knew that I wanted to be a children author. And that was because of this immense influence of Enid Blyton in my life. And I began reading her books, and you know, I was so crazily involved in her characters, in her stories, in mysteries. And I knew then that I wanted to create a similar world, you know, in the lives of children, the way she had created in mine. You know, however, luckily, unluckily, fortunately, unfortunately, I think along the way, I really started writing for adults first. And there was a time in my life when I felt that, well, the first book that I'd written for children was Mystery at Mulberry Cottage. It was lying in my drawer, and I wrote all these other books. And at some point, I felt, what am I doing? I always wanted to write for children. Why am I not bringing that book out? And that's where the change happened. And I brought that, opened my drawer, dusted the manuscript, and sent it to you.
That's wonderful. I think that's a great story to begin with on why you started writing for children. As
Yes.
publisher, I understand and I know the children's book market is a huge market and commercially very relevant market. But as an author, what does it take to be a children's author? How different it is from writing for adults?
Multiple, you know, lots of things actually are different. On the face of it, all appears the same because there's a story, there's a plot, there are characters. These are all the same. But honestly, to be a children's author, you need some qualities in you. And the first one is patience. You really need to be patient because, you know, you can get away when you're writing an adult book, you can get away with a lot of things, like probably you know, a complex plot which you don't really explain much. You rely on adult intelligence to take it forward. But when you're writing for children, you can't take this for granted. You have to simplify your imagination, your complex imagination, into simple visuals. You have to break it down. And I think that is this ability to break down complex imagination is very important when you're writing for children. Secondly, I think it requires a certain ability to go within yourself, you know, and into your past, like a flashback into your childhood. Because as a grown-up writing for children, you kind of in when you write for children, you tend to forget the original emotions, original intelligence, original curiosity, the energy that a child has, because you're grown up, you're an adult, you're dealing with adult issues. But to write for children, you have to slip back into your past and into your childhood, and you know, take out, extract certain emotions and certain likings and certain curiosity to translate it into the present books. So I think these are things that you need to have, you know, as a children's author, that you need to understand the present kids, you know, and I don't think they're any different from what you were when you were a child. I don't, of course, they are exposed to more gadgets and more social media and you know, different kinds of let's say peer pressures than when we were growing up. But the base thing of curiosity, you know, the base, how should I say, the basic intelligence, the basic how should I say, the kind of you know, the need to understand what's going on around you, the need to understand life, that curiosity is always there, I think, in all of us. So I think we need to not treat children as people, as kids who know nothing, but treat them as mini adults, treat them like your equal, not talk down to them, you know, take them along with you when you're writing, and create a world that they and you both would understand.
Wonderful. So if I summarize that, number one, simplify, simplify, simplify.
Yes.
Number two, get into the child's shoes, be like a child, act like a child. And number
Yes.
three, treat them as your equals and don't try and be
Talk down to them.
talked
Don't
down.
talk down to them. Yeah.
Three important points that it takes to be a child's author. Wonderful, Manjari. An important point here, you know, so given that in today's world, especially during Corona and COVID, people have been holed up inside their homes and they have a super high exposure to online channels. And children may or may not inadvertently get exposed to things which should not be child friendly, right?
Yeah.
While writing for children, how do you, as an author, manage to draw a line of what should be an exposed element to the child and what should not be based on your understanding? So where do you draw the line given children are more impressionable?
Well, again, I come back to that, treat them like adults, mini adults. I'll tell you why. I'll give you a simple example of the Harry Potter books. Okay, they're meant for children, but everybody reads them. But the language used in them, the kind of plots woven into the books, the kind of darkness that is there in the books is pretty adult. You know, I feel that if I look at the Harry Potter series, I think that if you want to really, how should I say, protect children from the harshness of reality, I would feel the Harry Potter books are very much adult in that sense. So when you are writing for children, I think you need to understand that there's reality on one side, there's innocence on one side, because children are innocent, they're blank slates. But you can't protect them completely from what's happening outside. So you need to put reality in such a way that they can understand it, but not get grossed out by it. So where do I draw the line? I draw the line where there's blood, there's goriness, there's things that they don't need to know at this age, things that, you know, the violence outside there. I feel all these elements that come into a natural adult plot need not necessarily be put into a children's book. I think that's where I would draw the line. Having said that, I would not shy away from writing about these things. I would put them in such a way that children would know about them, but at the same time, will not get grossed out, like I said.
Okay, that's very interesting. So is it any different in terms of actual writing when you do it for children as compared to adults?
I think you just need to be very spontaneous when you're writing for children. Very uncalculative, because then you retain the freshness in the book. I think adult writing is all about planning and plotting and laying it out in a clinical way, to at least for me, because it's all about mystery books, and mystery books are all about planning. But when you're writing for children, I think I would go more with spontaneity, although I have a definite goal towards which I'm aiming. I would still go with spontaneity to retain the freshness in the book. So yes, I think that would be the difference.
You mentioned about Harry Potter, and as a parent myself, I sometimes feel Harry Potter is not always age appropriate. While you begin at the first one, and as you progress further, obviously the characters are also growing. The child may not be growing that fast, right?
Yes.
So when you are exposing children to content and books which are above their age or not age appropriate, what do you think happens to children? How are they affected? How are they impacted?
No, so that was the perfect example we both agree on, that they were not age appropriate, but they were still very well received by children. And I think this boils down to their intelligence and treating them like mini adults. Because you know, children nowadays are very smart. They're curious. But I'll give you an example. I think what the Harry Potter books did was engage their imagination and kept them in touch with what's happening in the current scenario, I think. And in a way, it was very cleverly done. You know, you see, if you find representations of reality in it, there is this big bad world, there is this one whom you cannot name, you know, one big villain, and there's one little hero who's, you know, going to be outliving all this and outrunning all the magician, you know, wizards and all that. So you have the good and the evil conflict continuously happening in the series, which when you look at it and the way it's written is not age appropriate according to me. But for the children who devoured the books, they kind of satisfied an adult, a curiosity about the adult world, I think. And that was their step into reality. And that is why the books were successful, I felt.
Okay, that's very interesting. Another element that is a very important factor for children writing as compared to adult is the vocabulary that you use. Okay,
yeah.
So an author has a responsibility of introducing new words to the reader because he or she is growing up and building the vocabulary.
Yes.
Yet on the other side, you need to be conscious of the fact that certain difficult words may be too probably serious or too heavy for them to carry forward. So how do you balance the two?
Well, I write simple English anyway, so I don't have much of a problem. I mean, I believe in conveying what I want from my heart and whatever words need to be used would be used anyway. Having said that, I believe that whenever you're teaching a language, like for example, when I learned French way back in school, we were taught everything in French. It was a completely foreign language. We didn't know a thing about it. But still, the teacher used to come in class and talk in French. And then with her mannerisms and with the things she showed and whatever she conversed, we gradually started picking up what those words meant. There was no English translation. And I think the same thing happens when you're writing for children. You may not consciously put in big words, but if big words do come in, it is expected that children will automatically, you know, gauge what the meaning is, look up the dictionary and learn from it and move forward from there. So I don't think we need to be so conscious on the language we use. Use the right words that would convey what you want to convey. At the same time, make sure that it is simple, but not so simple that they might find it babyish, you know. So I don't think we need to focus so much on the language, because language sometimes can, you know, take a child from where the child is, the level of the child from where it is to another level. So we shouldn't control that. I think we should just let it be. All you really need to do is engage the child through thoughts, through words, through you know, the plots that are happening. Keep the energy. The energy of the child is so strong. I think you need words that would keep that energy going.
That's a wonderful point. Keep the energy going and keeping them engaged. Yes. Coming to the plots idea, so how many would argue and come back and say that you need to pass on the right moral values or the right sermons to your child as and when they're growing up, okay?
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
When you're looking at books, they're primarily mode of entertainment, right? So yeah. How do you balance sermonizing or giving out moral lessons versus entertaining? Is there a balance at all, or do you prefer one versus the other?
Well, I have very different thoughts on this. I don't think you need to sermonize children all the time. I think it's happening in schools, it's happening at home, it's happening through your prayers, it's happening through all, you know, all around you, people are just telling them, do this, don't do this, do this, don't do this. This is how you behave, this is how you shouldn't behave. I think it can be tiring at times. I think sometimes books need to just plain entertain. You know, I have been an infotainment producer, a children's producer for many years. What does that mean? It means that we give education through entertainment. So I did an animation film on the development of a wheel, okay, and how the wheel got developed and how it went from a block of wood to a wheel, from wheel to a car, from a car to a plane and a boat, and there was this whole series of things which happened animatedly. Okay, there was not a single word spoken. It was a cell-to-cell animation. I did this way back. And the point of that film was not to teach anything. It was just to entertain. Even the process may be wrong. Probably a block of wood did not really become a wheel, or it did not really turn into a plane. But it piques your curiosity. And that would probably help the child look up and read about it. Okay, that's one angle. Secondly, I wrote this book called Mittu, you know, The Adventures of Mittu. That book is a book which I would say straddle many ages and many values and many moral science lessons. But never have I ever preached in the book. You know, it's so the content is adult, brought down to children in such a way that there are adult themes portrayed through with the help of a magical kitten. There's no preaching. So what I'm trying to say is this, that sometimes pure entertainment is very important. If you can manage to slip in a message, well and good. But if you can't slip in a message, you haven't done anything wrong, because entertainment in its purest form is healthy, and it will help the child be more curious and, you know, lead on to other things.
Now that you've mentioned about Me Too, my next question would be around Me Too. A larger population or a wider number of people have responded to Me Too, as you already know. Was that because you brought in the main protagonist, who actually was a cat? Did the animal placement have to do anything with it? What do you think?
Yes, certainly. Of course. I'll tell you why. You know, even as children, when we are growing up, or even children today, if their mother tells them something, okay, they won't listen to her. But if the teacher tells them something, they'll believe her. If your friend tells them something, they'll believe her. But if your sister tells them something, they won't believe it. Because there's this element of familiarity breeds suspicion, not contempt, but suspicion that probably my friend and my teacher know better than my mother and my sister. Okay. If you take the same example and put it to an animal who's not from your world, okay, an animal telling you something an animal is a pure being, okay, is a pure representation of, how should I say, of a world that you inhabit, but is not really necessarily a part of it. So it becomes like a teacher, okay, but a cute teacher, a pure soul who's trying to tell you something. So definitely whatever the cat or the dog or whoever's saying something is going to appeal to the child. Okay, and the way the stories are woven, like you already know, it's the kitten full of mischief, which kind of triggers the imagination of the child as well, and then they kind of relate to the stories that happen with the kitten and how the kitten tries to solve certain issues. I think all this put together has appealed to the imagination of the child, and I think that's why that series, that book, has become quite successful.
That's a very different way of looking at things. Staying on that point, would you say that could be a reason why a lot of children authors use animals and inanimates and make them characters in their book? Would that be a reason?
Yes, of course. One of the reasons, definitely. Like I said, you need somebody who's not in your day-to-day life to tell you something, whether it's to tell you or to take you on a journey of imagination. This is somebody who's not within your familiar zone, then you get more drawn into it. There's more excitement in it. So that is why, yes, definitely, there are characters who are fantasized, characters who come from different worlds, and take you on a different journey. And that's why it gets more exciting, for sure.
So that was Bittu. What about Mystery at Malabar Cottage? You introduced something called the Spunky Cousin. Now, a lot of children's books are series, Spunky Cousin, part one, part two, so on and so forth. So why do you think series are important in children's book, A? And B, how did you come up with the idea of the Malabar Cottage? And when was it that you wrote? You said that it was the first book written wrong.
First book I ever wrote, yes. So like I said, as a child, I always knew I wanted to write. And one major influence was, of course, Enid Blyton and her books and the way she solves mysteries and how, the characters in her books go out on picnics, solve mysteries, go to Kiran Island, go on a boat, solve, things like that, they have fun. That was one part. The second part was, as growing up in a family, a big family, like we have four sisters and one brother, we always had this desire for adventure and excitement always within us. So we had a club, and a Golden Eagle Club. And we used to solve mysteries that we could find around us. And my mom used to actually help us by, laying a treasure hunt, which we used to go in search of all across Pune and then go and look for what the treasure is and where it was hidden. So this kind of built up in me, and I knew that I definitely had to combine this excitement with the sibling closeness, in an adventure, which would tell children that family is important, but enjoying things with your family is also very important. So I think Spunky Cousins came out of a need to put forth my idea that family, fun, adventure, solving mysteries, going out in nature, all of it is very important. What was the other question?
I'm coming to the other version of it. Yeah. So we would come back and say that, Spunky Cousin is very loosely based on Famous Five from Enid Blyton.
So yes, of course. See, because, Enid Blyton, Agatha Christie, Daphne du Maurier, and so many other authors have already done all that is there to be done in creativity. Let me tell you that no one's any more original. We will only recycle with different characters, different plotting, structure, narratives, what has already been done for years and years and years. Okay. So being original is a very difficult thing in today's world. Okay. Having said that, cousins coming together to solve a mystery cannot not be a part of an Enid Blyton world. It's too much done there and all done it. So even if I write something really original, the moment I have children solving a mystery, the comparison is automatically with Enid Blyton. Not just me, let anyone write anything to do with that. So that's what I mean by saying it's difficult to be original in terms of what's already been done. Okay. Secondly, I think what you said was about series. Why is it important to have a series? And for children especially, I think characters developing over a number of books can take them along, and there's a certain kind of bonding that happens with characters when they come back again and again in another book and take the children along on, flights of imagination or on different journeys. So you just write one book and it's over, and children can forget that book because it's just a mystery, and the adventure's over and they move on to the next adventure. But when that same group comes back again with a fresh adventure, there is a kind of a linking and a bonding which goes on. And the success of a series, I think the chances of the success of the series grows with that bonding. So I would always say that for children to connect with the characters, a series is much better.
So, would you say that if somebody is planning to be a children's author, they should rather plan a series than a single book?
No, depends on what they want to convey. Okay, if it's just a concept that can take place in one book and get done with, they don't need a series. But when there's an adventure series happening or a mystery series happening, and multiple plots and multiple story landscapes happen, that time series is important. But if it's just something that you want to talk about in one book, I think it all depends on what they want to convey.
Okay. How would you compare India's traditional literature meant for kids versus Western literature available for kids?
I think Indians are trapped, particularly trapped in this notion that everything has to be educational. I find every children book that I pick up trying to teach something. Look
Okay,
at the.
no, I'm not talking about contemporary. I'll come to contemporary in a while.
Okay, all
Right
right,
now, I'm
okay.
talking about Indian content which is traditional. So, for example, Panchatantra, you'll have Tenali Rama,
Okay.
you have Chanda Mama, and the sorts of content that probably you may have grown up with, which somewhat is slowly going out, like your Amar Chitrakatha series. So, they're all
Yeah.
traditional stories, and India has lots and lots of folk tales and traditions, grandma tales on which
Yeah.
children have grown up. Okay, even I and you may have grown up on that, versus Western literature, vis-a-vis the names that you mentioned. So, how do you compare the two? And what is good or bad, or anything that you prefer one over the other?
Well, I grew up on Indian Blyton books.
Okay.
I read Panchatantra on the side. I read Amar Chitrakatha on the side, but they didn't form my staple diet. My staple diet was Western literature, and which is the reason why I used to feel that I'm Enid Blyton reborn, because I associated so much with her. I used to feel, oh, I can write these stories, and and she must be me. But of course, I later on realized that she passed away after I was born, so of course I wasn't Enid Blyton reborn. But what I'm trying to say is that I grew up with that staple diet, and this that was happening on the side, the Indian literature scene. I think the difference is where that we came from a convent school, and probably that is the difference, where we were not really introduced to this kind of literature. I started reading this much later, actually. Tinkle Tinkle comics and all was something that I saw much later. I
Okay.
started just reading Enid Blyton and Secret Seven and Famous Five, and I just moved on from there in the Western world. So when I compare, yeah, probably if I was introduced to it much earlier, maybe the kind of writing I would have done would have been different today. I don't know. Maybe the kind of identity crisis that I had, I kept thinking that growing up that I was a British girl. I felt I because I couldn't relate to anything around me. I just felt that I that there are villages, and then you go cycling in villages, and then you eat scones and sandwiches and drink lemonade. And so that kind of a thing, and I grew up thinking, that this is the world around me wasn't the way it was in my imagination, and that kind of was a barrier in even when I started writing. For example, I was writing all about Peter and Pam and Fatty and all that, and then as I began growing up, I realized I was only replicating what I was reading. So for me to get in the Indian element, I had to really work. I had to consciously make an effort to drop the British identity that I had can that I had rubbed off on me and get on the Indian identity. And that is where Amar Chitra Katha and, you know, all that, and the Tinkle comics and with Vikram and Vetal and all came into focus, and I consciously went there. But yes, when you're talking about the Indian traditional and the Western, I think there is a little bit of conflict of how should I say, message in it. One is very moralistic, the other is adventure and fun. And I think it's up to children to choose what they want to where they want to head.
Okay, now that takes me to a very different controversial question that I you know, that probably is there in everybody's mind all the time. Why is Western literature so aspirational when we have so much of Indian literature around us? Parents always prefer the kids reading Western authors as compared to Indian authors. Why?
It's a question I want to answer. I don't know how to answer, because I'm the perfect example. I grew up reading Western authors. So even when I go into the market, my first inclination is to look up the Western authors. It's the way we are brought up, I think. Also, I think is this subconscious influence on us that anything that comes from the West is better than our homegrown. And I think this applies in every field and also in literature. So when you have a thriller writer from the West writing thrillers and you have an Indian writer writing thrillers, the public automatically goes towards the Western thriller. You know, for some reason, they feel that is going to be better than this one. And this is that the vestige of the lingering of the Western superiority or whatever that we have in our mind. I think that is basically it. And that also applies to parents picking up West books by Westerners first and then by Indians. And it's something we need to change, and we need to accept our authors as good authors and with fantastic, work that each one is doing out there. I think we need to promote Indian authors to a great level.
Wonderful. I think that's a very well said statement, that we now as India are producing a lot of good literature which needs to be given out to people, and access should be provided. So that's a wonderful point. On that, I have another question back again to the literature that has already been created. We have grown up on folk tales and fairy tales and, you know, grim fairy tales. But when now, as a more sensitive generation, kids look at those books, they find it full of themes that don't gel with them anymore, like violence, like cruelty against animal or gender issues.
Yeah.
So is it time to rewrite our entire literature for children? Do you think so?
I don't know about rewriting, but definitely it can be presented differently. You know, rehashing of our literature, whether it's mythology, call it reinterpretation, I call it rehashing. Okay, so I think we need to be original now. I think as much as we can, like I said, with limitations, we need to look at life differently. We need to understand where we went wrong, because we have gone wrong, like you said, violence to animals, you know, and gender issues, black and white, fair, like even Enid Blyton is continuously now, criticized, because a gollywog is always black. And, you know, there are so, or Anne is always cooking while her brothers are going out. So all these things are coming into, when we were reading it, it never even struck us. But yes, these subtle messages may have gone into some. To me, it didn't make any difference at all. I grew up a healthy feminist who believed in women going all out there and doing things. So if you have to talk about literature which is tainted, okay, if I'm the perfect example of the person who grew up on that literature, and I don't think I have any flaws in that sense. I don't believe in violence. I don't believe in gender issues. So you see, I don't think it's such a big damage that has happened. I think we need to look at it differently. Yes, rewrite. Yes, reintroduce new concepts. Okay, reintroduce the same story in probably a different way, but more than that, be original and bring in new stuff. New stuff which is in times with the current thing. I mean, today, if we still keep talking about should women change their name after marriage or not, I think this is such a I know it's a feminist thing, but it's such a, you know, in my childhood, when I was growing up, that was the issue. I'm 50 plus now, and if you're still talking about should women change their name after marriage or not, we have not moved at all. So what I'm trying to say is that bring in new stuff, you know, sweep off this old thing, you know, all these old issues, take them for granted that things have changed. Don't keep rehashing what's already out there. Just forget it all and start afresh.
On that note, so what is the contemporary literature looking like around you? So when you are also a literature festival director, so when you are engaging with your fellow authors in the children's literature space, how do you see the children's literature space growing right now today in India?
I see it growing very in a linear manner. I do not see variety at all. I'm going to be very honest with you. Like I said, they're still trapped in the notion of educating children. And every book I pick up is either preachy or teaching them, or it's a biography, or it's about the 50 first women achievers of the world. Or there's always some information which seems to be wanting to be given. I'm not saying that's bad. I'm saying that these books are also needed. But we need to diversify. There needs to be so much more out there, which is just not happening. We're stuck in this whole information bandwagon. I think we need to outgrow that bandwagon, hop onto another, many more bandwagons, which are going to take children on beautiful journeys across the universe, you know? And I think we need to stop thinking that we need to educate. We don't need to do that. Education is happening every single minute of your life, of their lives. They're learning from every breath they take, to every interaction they have, to every book they read, to every television show they watch, to every friend they talk to. It's happening all the time. Don't burden them with so much information that it can put them off, you know? So, I mean, of course, parents would like, that's what parents go for. I can see parents going for informative books. All that is fine, but go on, you know, sidestep this whole mainstream educational purpose and go into something far more beautiful. I'm sure there's lots of beautiful stuff to be written.
Okay. On that point, again, another important question which almost every parent is asking these days.
Yeah.
How do I make my child read more, or rather start reading, because they're so hooked onto other forms of entertainment or they're touched onto screen? So how does one get the child to start reading?
Yeah, it's a difficult question considering the present conditions and the fact that reading, I feel overall, you know, has really gone down. I mean, even parents for that matter. I mean, so many people, I realize that I feel India doesn't read. I mean, going from my personal, I'm not saying the whole of India, but I'm saying the percentage that's educated, whatever is the person, I think very few are actually reading. Okay. Now, to make a child read, I'll give you an example of my sister. My sister, when she was young, Purnima, she had so much energy in her that even in her sleep, she used to fight. You know, literally, she used to box in the air. And my mom realized that this, and she was like a tomboy. So my mom realized that this energy had to be channelized. So she put her in a judo class. Okay. And once she put her in the judo class, that was just the right thing for her. And she went on to become a black belt gold medalist. Now, the story, the example I'm giving you is this, that one needs to really identify the plus points of your child. Okay. There is, just because every child should read doesn't mean that every child should read. Okay. That's number one. It's just because every child should come first in class doesn't mean that every child should come first in class. So I think every parent must understand the plus points of their children and tap into that energy. If you think your child is, you know, a good orator, a good writer, a good, you know, plays with words, loves to, you know, solve crossword puzzles, play Scrabble, you know, Scrabble, whatever, those kind of things, engage them in those and help them develop from there. I think engaging that energy is very important, and catching it young is also very important. Second thing I would say, surround them with books. I mean, if you still want them to read, every child to read, just surround them with books. Take them to libraries, take them to bookstores, show them picture books, let them get fascinated by the written word. Okay, one doesn't need to jump into reading all the time. You can start small by just, you know, every time you go to a bookstore, take your child along. Let him play and sit with and play with books. You will get to know whether he is going to be reading one day or not. So these little exercises and understanding your child is going to help you understand whether he will become a reader or not. And if he's going to be a reader, nothing and no one can stop him.
Okay, that's a very, very positive point to identify what a child likes before you can thrust something down them.
Yes.
So let's assume a child is a reader like and has those qualities in them. Do you think there are particular kind of themes that work better with children and that may engage them better?
You mean books?
In books, yeah.
I will say just go for entertainment. I'll always say that. Pick up any book which is entertaining, which takes the child's imagination and plays with it. Anything like that. Themes, adventure, excitement, camping, traveling. As a child, I used to pore over these Webster maps. I don't know if you ever heard of the Webster dictionaries.
Yeah.
And at the end of the Webster dictionaries, there used to be huge maps.
Yes, absolutely.
And I remember as a child, just sitting there looking at the maps and following the routes. That was my goal in life, to travel to every country that I could see on that map. What happened with that? As a result of that, one day I started writing destination thrillers. You see? So the roots of the destination thriller have gone way back
into
my childhood in the Webster dictionaries. So that's what I mean. Let the child explore on its own. Don't thrust everything down his throat. A child who is going to eventually read, write, whatever, however you want to educate and whichever direction you want to push him, is going to find his or her own path. You just have to give them the tools. Okay, to discover this. I got a dictionary to do it. Somebody else, take them to a bookstore, like I said, or surround them with books. So, traveling, everything. There's so many things that a child would be interested in. And I think you just need to give all to them, let them pick and choose and let them decide for themselves.
Oh, that's lovely. Before we come to the end of the session, I would request you to give out your recommendation for books that parents should actually take to their kids.
Oh, Lord, that's a tough one, Deepankar. Gosh, I don't even know actually what are the books that have come in. I've seen this latest book by Anupama Jain, which I have found very interesting. What is it called?
Kings, Saviors and Scoundrels.
That's right. It's the picture's also very interesting. The cover is very beautiful. I quickly read on the website, on the net, what it is about. It sounds very interesting. So yes, why not? Children should read that. And of course, my two books, Mystery at Malabar Cottage and Adventures of Mittu. Then another book which I thought I saw was which was the book? There was one where the translation one that Shutapa did.
That's the classical translation of Thakurmani into English.
That's right. That's right. Actually, yeah.
So introduce them to regional creatures.
Exactly. Introduce them to literature in other languages. I think that's a great way to start. So yes, lots of books.
Great.
But all the mystery ones are mine.
It was a pleasure talking to you, Manjali. I think we had a great time discussing and talking about children's literature. Thank you so much. And over to you, Corina, now.
Thank you.
Here, as we conclude, I would like to say that it was a really great, knowledgeable discussion where our budding readers, even the writers, must have got the insightful knowledge through this session. And I believe the children will now start reading the books, and the parents watching this session right now also will encourage them. It's a pleasure, though, ma'am, to have you here. I would like to thank Dr. Manjari Prabhu and Mr. Deepankar Mukherjee for their insightful session, discussion, sharing great knowledge and experience, also giving their precious time for this SGR Knowledge Foundation Knowledge Series. I also thank Chairman of Raisoni Group of Institutions, Mr. Sunil Raisoni, for giving this opportunity, and Readomania Publication for the support to this session. A very big thanks to all our viewers for attending this session. This session will be there on our OCLF Nagpur Orange City Literature Festival Nagpur YouTube channel and SGR Knowledge Foundation Facebook page. We will be coming up with more sessions. Till then, stay tuned with us and please do subscribe if you haven't to our SGR Knowledge Foundation Facebook page and Orange City Literature Festival YouTube channel. Till then, stay tuned. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, ma'am. Thank you so much, sir. Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. So
Vision.